there. Good afternoon, everybody. It's 4:06 in the Rocky Mountain West, and this is the Around the House program. Actually, it's 4:07. Anyhow, we're glad you're with us here on the program. We'll be here a couple of hours talking about that special place that you and I call home. We knew it, didn't we? We knew we'd go from a cool gray spring with nothing in between, and it's summer and it's hot, and that's fine. I'm not going to complain. It's 90-ish, kind of all over the listening area here for Around the House. And so anyway, we're grateful it's summer. I'm sure your yard's looking good, and mine is too. And it's just going to be a glorious Rocky Mountain summer at my house, and I hope yours also. We'll be here, as I say, till 6 o'clock. We'd love to talk to you. You can get on board at 303-713-8255. That's our contact line, and we'd be delighted and thrilled beyond compare. We'd be just so tickled to get you involved with the program. And let's see here. What am I going to start with? Oh, this is an email sent to me by a listener from many years ago, Robbie. And these are the subject of this email. I think it's just kind of cute. Buy a dog. All right, here we go. If you want someone who will eat whatever you put in front of him and never say it's not quite as good as his mother made it, buy a dog. If you want someone always willing to go out at any hour for as long and wherever you want, then buy a dog. If you want someone who will never touch the remote, doesn't care about football, and can sit next to you as you watch romantic movies, then buy a dog. If you want someone who is content to get up on your bed just to warm your feet and whom you can push off if he snores, then buy a dog, right? If you want someone who never criticizes what you do, doesn't care if you're pretty or ugly, fat or thin, young or old, who acts as if every word you say is especially worthy of listening to and loves you unconditionally, perpetually, all together now, then buy a dog. But on the other hand, if you want someone who will never come when you call, ignores you totally when you come home, leaves hair all over the place, walks all over you, runs around all night and only comes home to eat and sleep, and acts as if your entire existence is solely to ensure his happiness, then buy a cat. Now, to be honest, you thought I was going to say get married, but no, buy a cat. And that's the difference. Viva la difference, dogs and cats, right? 303-713-8255 is our telephone number. Who we have here right away as we open up, Jim and Aurora. You're on the air with Ken Moon Around the House. Hey, Jim. Glad you called.
Hi, Jim.
Hi.
So I have a question about... Hi. I have a question for you about windows.
Yeah.
I have two windows on the back of our house. They're double pane windows. And I have a few BB holes in them from many years ago, and I want to get that situation taken care of. Is there the only damage to the window is on the outside pane on about three sections? They're pretty small sections, actually. Is there anybody, or is it a good idea, or is there any way to just replace the one piece of outside glass, or do you need to replace the entire frame?
My answer would have been different 25 years ago, but right now, yeah, I think we want to replace the whole glass sandwich, if you will. Trying to take that apart and reglaze it is even if it were, and it probably is possible, would be a very, very expensive and time-consuming. So I think you want to, I don't think you'll pay any more if you just replace the whole pane. And then when you do that, Jim, you'll have a brand new window because there'll be new desiccated air inside the glass sandwich, if you will. And so if there's any dirt or film on the inside of the old pane, it'll be gone. So I would probably just replace the whole thing because you won't be saving any money. Okay.
So I'd replace the double pane thickness, both pieces of glass. But do I need to replace the entire window? The frame, the whole thing.
No. They can just take out the insulated unit, the actual glass sandwich, if you will. Yeah, and just put a whole new one in. You won't need to replace the window. Just like they did in the factory. Yeah, you'll be okay from that standpoint.
Do you think I've been told by one glass company that they won't do that? They're afraid they'll damage the window. They can't. They won't do it. And so do you know of anybody in particular that might offer that kind of service?
One of the companies that I've recommended in the past for glass repair is Ken Carroll. Glass. Have you called them?
No, I haven't.
Give them a holler and see. I mean, you know what? If I hear one more person say, I'm afraid I'll damage. Okay, if you damage the window, you damage the window. But at least give it a try. You know what I'm saying? But I think, you know, listen, I suppose it's possible it could be a window that it would be very difficult to do it. And there is some risk. But I would get another opinion if I were you. So call Ken Carroll Glass. I've had good luck recommending them in the past, so let me know on that what they say. I'd love it if you'd give me some feedback of how that goes.
I'd
need another opinion, okay?
Yeah, I'll do that. I really appreciate that advice. That's good to know.
Not at all. I'm glad you called, Jim. Okay. Let's see. Also in Aurora, we have Bill on the line. Bill, we're glad you called, and we'll get you on the air right now. Hey, Bill, what's going on?
Hey, what's up? I'm in Lakewood anyway.
Oh, Lakewood. Okay. All right. It's fine.
Hey, I got
would you like to live in Aurora, or are you happy where you are?
I don't think Aurora, no. I don't think Colorado anymore.
Oh, yeah. Politics, right? I have a good neighbor just two doors down that's leaving the state and moving to Wyoming because of the election and the politics, and you know but that's not what we're here for. But anyway, what's going on with you?
About 45 years ago, I lived in Roosevelt, Utah. I just looked it up today. They got a population of 7,000.
Mm.
Anyway.
My buddy's looking at Cody, Wyoming, which is about a 10,000-person town, and I've heard a lot of good things about it. Anyway, what can I do for you, Bill?
And I was just looking quick on your website. Do you got any tree trimmers?
No, I really don't. I'm sorry I don't, but the thing about tree trimmers is you want to find somebody in your part of the metro area so they don't have to travel a long ways. And so you just have a little, you know, sometimes it can simply be a handyman unless it's really elaborate or you got to get way up high.
Yeah, well, it's probably, I'm just going to guess, 60, 70, 80 feet dead straight.
Oh, all right. You're going to need an actual tree trimming company. Yeah.
And they want $1,700. I mean,
oh, that's about, well, I would have guessed $1,000 to $1,500 for any big time removal. I know I'm one of my neighbors just went through that with a big cottonwood, and so no, I'm not surprised at all. They're very expensive. Is this something that you can you and a neighbor can share? Because you know, maybe it affects both of you. Or is it just on your property?
We're talking, but we ain't. I've lived here for almost 40 years, and we're okay.
All right, I got you. Yeah, but that's you know, listen, I'll ask the audience if you know you're in the west side of the metro area, if Lakewood area, and if there's anybody that they really like over there for tree removal, then please call in, and maybe Bill, you can keep listening and we'll figure it out. How's that?
Then I got a trick question for you.
Okay,
you got any tricks for spiders? We're just in this house has always been I'm down by Crown Hill. I got a half an acre horse property. That's, you know, where I'm at. And spiders have always been. I just ordered on eBay some of those hedge balls. You know those. Ones I'm talking about. They're green and they look like oranges.
Yeah, they're a special kind of orange. And I've lost the thread on the name. We've talked about them before here on the program.
I've used them for years. And I used to get them at, remember Gold's up on 26th and Kipling?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Small grocery, well, they closed down. But that's where I got them all the time. And
what's the name of that? Now, you've got me going nuts here. I'm sure somebody will call in, because we have talked about those. They're a special orange that the odor is unique. And
well, they're called hedge balls.
Hedge balls, yeah, but I think there's a species of
hedge apples. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I need to look because, you know, I've over 28 years. I've talked about so many things. My mind's getting filled up, I guess. Bill, thanks for your call and good luck with that tree. But I think $1,000 to $1,500 is what it's going to cost. We'll be right back right here on Around the House.
From your faucet to your furnace, Ken Moon has solutions around the house.
Welcome back to the program. What I was trying to think of, hedge apples, are really Osage oranges. That's the thing I was trying to think of. I think they're from east of here, as I remember. They're grown kind of in the Midwest area. But anyway, Osage oranges, that was actually what I was trying to think of. Let's see, we've got Mike in Denver. Let's get Mike on the air right now. Hey, good morning or good afternoon. You're on the air with Ken Moon. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Ken.
Hi there.
Wanted to check with you about window-mounted air conditioners. I'm kind of looking at something that cooled down.
Window-mounted what, did you say?
Air conditioners. The kind that you put in the window unit.
Yes. What about them?
Yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts on those because I'm looking at possibly buying one of them, and I wonder, in your experience, do you think they do a fairly good job in a house?
You're talking about window mounted AC units, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, you cut out when you first started talking. I think they're fine. I used to have one in a house that we lived in a home with hot water heat only, and so we couldn't put central air in. And so in the master suite, of course, we wanted to be pampered in the master suite. The kids, forget it. You can be warm in your bedrooms. I'm thinking back now, I'm rolling my eyes. But no, we used one in our master suite, and it worked very, very well. Now they're really quiet. In those days, we're talking 35 years ago or so, It was a little noisy, but on the other hand, it gave us nice white noise. But yeah, I do like them. And in a two-story house, if you leave certain doors open, if you have an open stairwell, that cold air will fall down into the main level. Does that help you a little?
Yeah, I think so. I do have a ranch with a basement. Is that what you're talking about, the cool air?
Oh, okay. I was picturing my situation. We were in a two-story. And so we could run that master bedroom window cooling unit, and the air would, cold air is heavy, of course, it would fall down the stairs. But in a ranch-style home, you don't worry about it because the basement's cool anyway.
Okay. So, and the other question I had is, there's another one that I noticed the big box stores are selling. They don't mount in the window, but they sit on the floor, and then they exhaust through a window. Have you got any feedback on those?
I've had a couple of different friends that lived in smaller apartments and things, and one in a townhouse that used those, and they work pretty well. There's another thing you might think about. When I say the word split, does that mean anything to you?
Yeah, I think that's it's like a mini split where you don't hook it to the furnace, but it has like a condenser that goes outside.
Condenser outside.
And then
the unit mounts on the wall. It's similar, analogous to a motel room with that heater cooler on the under the window. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's similar to that. Splits work nicely. Now, do you have a regular hot air furnace system, Mike?
Yeah, but the furnace is, I'm probably going to be moving in a couple of years, and the furnace is working okay, but I would have to replace the furnace, I'm told, in order to put an AC essential air in it. So I'm eliminating that.
What was the reason given to having to replace the furnace?
It's old. It's like 40 years old.
Okay, well, that may indeed be the case. Well, yeah, you're going to pay for a split system. You're going to pay, it's going to be a couple of grand, I guess, or even a little more. So I don't know if that helps you or not. My buddy, I'm about to do a commercial for Brian at Eagle Crest in Denver, and he has a AC furnace combination for about $7,500 bucks total for both. And if you're going to sell your house one of these days, I mean, you'll get real estate credit for that new system. Whereas if you have a 40-year-old furnace, a home inspector will spot it and say, it's got to go. And so you may be penalized having an old furnace. That's something to think about anyway.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Okay. Well, thank you, Ken.
No, that's fine. I'm glad to have helped. I hope that's helpful to you. And good luck. And give Brian a call. I think you might be surprised. Listen, have him come look at your furnace. Maybe he can figure out a way to get an AC in there anyway. And some people, you know, and not Brian, but a lot of people will tell you what they want to, what you need to hear to so you buy a whole new furnace and all that. Mike, thanks and good luck. Appreciate it. 303-713-8255 is our telephone number, and we're glad you're with us here on the Around the House program. Let's see what's going on here. A couple of emails. Oh, here's an email that came in just, half hour ago or something. This is from Ann. 1974 house, pressboard, hardboard siding. The panels appear vertical. It needs painting, but the bottom edges are damaged and weathered little crevices. How can it be repaired before painting, or should I consider vinyl? Well, pressboard, hardboard, / masonite, which is, of course, a trade name, masonite, it came in many different styles, vertical and horizontal, so I'm not surprised. You have, you know, we had 4x8 and 4x9 sheets with vertical grooves in them and all kinds of decorative coverings for the masonite siding. It was it was used by virtually all builders in 1974. And yeah, those edges, the bottom edges, they just absorb moisture from the ground. They get sprinkled on and rained on and all that. And so they do deteriorate from the ground up, as you're describing here. Well, one thing you could do is to simply hire somebody to put a piece of trim board the bottom of that siding, and then go ahead and paint the whole thing. As long as the siding is not wet, if it's just weathered but dry, and you could put a piece of just a 1x4 trim board, MDF particle board type trim board, or decorative or cedar or whatever you wanted to do, put it right over there, caulk it really well, and just go ahead and paint, and that trim board will look like it has been there since the beginning and like it belongs there. And so there you go. Yeah, just cover it up. But don't cover up wet wood. If it's wet, you need to have somebody get a saw in there and horizontally cut a chunk out of there, because you just can't cover up wet wood with impunity. It'll bite you, because it'll keep rotting and so on. So yeah, just cover it with a trim board. I don't think you got to rip all that siding off, unless the siding itself up higher on the house is, you know, in poor shape, and you know, you might want to consider vinyl siding or stucco over siding, which is a little pricey. Not as much as you would think. Stucco over siding works really well, because that old vertical masonite hardboard type stuff you have, they'll just put chicken wire out over it and some tar paper and stucco it, and your house will look new and modern and expensive, right? So don't neglect to think of stucco over siding. Vinyl is okay. Vinyl goes on easy. It's relatively inexpensive, but a lot of people don't like the look of vinyl. So, I mean, I'll leave it up to you. But what you got is, you can just put a new trim board over it. It'll look like it was there, as I say, when the house was built, and it'll look fine. And just go ahead and caulk it really well, and make sure that it's well sealed from the elements that are to come, and just go ahead and paint, and it'll look like a brand new house. So there you go, Ann. Thanks for your call. Here's an email I got from Bruce. Just wanted to pass on kudos to Brian at Eagle Crest. Was able to tell me what my problem was over the phone. Sent me a YouTube link. Highly recommend him. Appreciate his professionalism and honesty. And next time I'll call him first. Well, thank you, Bruce. I'll get lots of emails about Brian at Eagle Crest. He's my Denver-based heating and air conditioning guy. And I want you to call him at 303-451-5607. Brian will do a great job for you. And his philosophy is just what you need when you need it. He doesn't try to upsell you or sell you expensive parts or even a new furnace if you don't need it, because he knows you'll be a customer for life. Since 1983, just giving you what you need at the time you need it, and his prices are great. And he has that furnace AC combo I was talking a minute ago about, it about $7,500, give or take a few bucks, but $7,500 complete, a new furnace and AC system at your house, a Rheem system, you'll love it. I have a Rheem in my house. And so if you have an old furnace, as our caller Mike did, and you want AC because you're tired of hot summers, give Brian a call, 303-451-5607. If you need to get your AC checked, and you should do that every couple of years, Also give him a call. He has a special deal, Metro Area, for my listeners. The price is $89 for furnace and air conditioning, both in the same trip. So I want you to call Brian at 303-451-5607. Tell him I sent you. And by the way, if you want a $50 gift certificate for any of Eagle Crest's services, just email me right here in the studio, and I'll forward it to Brian. It is a free lunch, not a $50 free lunch. Why not? From Brian at Eagle Crest. So you can email me through the AroundTheHouse.com website. Call Brian at Eagle Crest. He's my Denver-based heating and air conditioning guy. I think you really like the way he does his business. 303-451-5607. We'll be right back right here on Around the House.
Got a fix-it problem at your house? Ken Moon can help. Call 303-713-TALK. That's 303-713-8255.
I like that. 23 minutes before 5 o'clock on the Around the House program. We're glad you're with us here. And call in early and often, as they say. And if you want to give us a holler, we'd appreciate it at 303-713-8255. That's our telephone number, and of course live email, which I haven't been promoting here. I should have been doing that at aroundthehouse.com. Let's see, here's an apropos or a very apropos of the heat and a very timely email from Lisa. Hi Ken, would you please give us a review on how to circulate cooler basement air through our one-story house? Our finished basement is so much cooler than the upstairs. Do we put the thermostat to on or what? And we've tried it several times. Doesn't seem to do anything except add to the electric bill by running the fan. Well, you won't notice a big difference when you do this. You're on the right track, by the way. Don't beat yourself up there, Lisa, because you're doing the right thing, because you want to suck cool air into the system and have it mix with the warmer upstairs air and moderate each one. The basement air will become warmer and the upstairs come cooler. And you won't notice a huge difference, but there is a measurable difference, especially in the amount of air conditioning you use. So, yeah, that's a big reservoir of cool air in your basement. I'm in a ranch-style house, and my difference is, you know, can be on hot days like today, maybe up to 15 degrees, because that soil outside your house is pretty stable temperature-wise. It's about 52 or so Fahrenheit year-round. So you're on the right track here. Now, the secret is to have a lot of return air, enough return air in your basement that will suck the air off the floor of your basement and shove it into the furnace to be mixed with the warm air from upstairs. So if you don't have, if your return air is on the ceiling in your basement, forget it. That's not going to work. If there's no return air at all, and some people finish their basement with no return air down there at all, and in which case you want your heating person or company to put a nice big maybe 12 by 12 at least, or even bigger, return air through the bottom of the furnace down near the floor. And then when you come home, this is not something you can do for hour after hour. Your email here kind of transmits a little bit of impatience because, you know, you think it should be doing a lot better than it's doing, and you're leaving the fan on a long time. Once you've run that fan at the end, say you come home from work at, I don't know, 5 o'clock, and it's a hot afternoon, and the upstairs is maybe 75, and downstairs is might be, I don't know, maybe 68 or something. You turn the furnace fan to always on your thermostat. You're right. Let the furnace fan run. And let it run for about a half hour. After a half hour, you're not going to be getting a lot of benefit. That cold air reservoir will be replaced with warmish air in the basement. So, you know, or if you want to, you could leave the furnace fan on for the whole evening until you retire. When you come home, leave it on for the remainder of your day. And that will also, but you know, you get the most good out of it in the first 20 or 30 minutes or so as that air gets sent round and round in your system. So that's kind of the story on that one. But no, you're on the right track. You're using a reservoir of cool air in the basement to moderate your upstairs air, which will lower your cooling costs. And this is pretty much any house with a basement, you can do this. It's very effective in a ranch-style home for sure. And so, you're doing the right thing. So I would continue to do that, but wait till you come home at the end of the day when it's warmest upstairs and just turn that furnace fan to always on, and I think you'll notice a difference. You'll be able to tell. This is from Bob. We estimate we're running, guy must be kind of an engineer. We estimate we're running a 9,200 gallons of water down the drain to get hot water from our water heater to the second floor bedroom. I was looking at installing a Watts recirculating pump. I'm not sure if this is feasible with a water softener system. Will it work with a softener? If so, what needs to be taken into consideration? You're low on that. I saw an EPA estimate. You know, the government fiddles with these numbers and so on, but that the average family wastes maybe up to 14,000 gallons of water a year, just, you know, waiting for hot water. That's, what, 35 gallons a day waiting for hot water. That's a lot of water, and so you don't want to waste it if you can. And that Watts recirculating pump works nicely. The principle is fairly easy to understand. You simply put the pump in the system and bridge across the hot and cold water lines, and it sucks warm and then hot water from the water heater up into that second story master bedroom and shoves it down through the cold water pipe. So it works really well. And so you just, there's a timer on it. You set the timer for maybe 20 minutes before you're going to get up in the morning, and the hot water will be right there without wasting it. And this is a system. There's other versions of this. There was one called the AutoCirc, which is another one. The Watts system is kind of popular. It's on, I noticed it was on Amazon, and I think it's $190, something like that. It comes with very homeowner-friendly fittings and pipes and to bridge across the water lines. Very easy to install. The hard part is you need an electrical outlet under the lavatory in your basement, but it works really well. So look for it online if you'd like, or I know that it's available at places, you know, like Lowe's and so on. WATTS, the Watts hot water circulating system. And there are other ways to do that. If you have a full basement house with an open basement unfinished, you can put an extra water line to the bottom of the water heater and run water around like that. So anyway, that is a good system, and I think you're probably wasting more water than you think. 303-713-8255. I hope you caught my column this morning in the Denver Gazette and the Colorado Springs Gazette. The Denver Gazette is a new voice in town, new paper that's been around for, I don't know, 9 months or so. It's a online newspaper that's very easy to navigate. Of course, you can take it with you. You don't have piles of newspapers to throw in the trash every week, and it's inexpensive. There's a 30-day free trial for the Denver Gazette, and my column is in there every Saturday morning. I'd love it if you check it out. It's a snazzy newspaper, as I say, easy to navigate, colorful, and just gives you a little different point of view than the other newspaper in Denver. And also, the Colorado Springs Gazette has carried my column for, I don't know, going back to 1996 or something like that. This morning, the column was about dancing washing machines running across the floor because they just want to jump all over the places, these front-loading washing machines that spin really quickly. Also about, can you set up an electronic field to keep pests away? What else here? Attic insulation, ceiling fans to keep the house cooler. That's something I should talk about here in a few minutes. An old boiler, should I replace it or shouldn't I? So those are just some of the questions. It's a Q&A format for my column, and there's usually six or seven. Let's see, one, two, three, four, five, six this morning, six or seven Q&As in there. Some of them you'll recognize because it's an email you sent me. I'll use your first name, not your last name, of course. And I think you'll enjoy the column in the Denver Gazette and the Colorado Springs Gazette. And if you get a hold of denvergazette.com, you can get a 30-day free trial. I think that's still in effect. And then so you get used to it and then sign up for it. But it's not very expensive. I think you'll like it. So let's see. Before we go to our break, I wanted to talk to you about insects. You know, that's not your favorite topic, but I have a product by Bonai. Bonai is that company that makes these great herbicides, fertilizers, pest control products for your home, lawn, and garden. Bonide's 8, EIGHT, just like it sounds. Bonide's 8 insect control is what you need to get for insects around your trees, shrubs, lawns, flowers, vegetables, fruit, whatever. It's effective against more than 100 insects. Use 8 to eliminate even ticks and fleas and ants and other home-invading pests. I know ants are making a big comeback back here because of the hot weather. 8 kills insects on contact, repels them up to 30 days. Odorless, non-staining. If you want one product to get rid of insects in your life this summer, get 8 brand insect control from Bonide. Bonide products, of course, are family made in America, and you can find 8 and all the other great Bonide products at, here's some of the retailers that carry Bonide products: O'Toole's Garden Center in Westminster, Jensen's Flower and Garden in Lakewood, Fort Collins Nursery, Rick's down in the Colorado Springs and Harding in the Springs, and Wright's Nursery in Arvada, and many other fine retailers. If you can't find it, then I'd go to the internet and go to bonide.com and put your zip code in. But if insects are in your life, and I'll bet they are, you need Bonide 8 this summer. Bonide products, family made in America.
Things break around the house. That's why there's Around the House with Ken Moon.
9 minutes before 5 o'clock on the Around the House program. Good to have you with us here. Thank you for joining us and on your weekend. I know your weekend time's important to you, but I'm really grateful that you are here listening to the show. If you want to call us, 303-713-8255 is our contact line. Here's an interesting email from, I don't think I've ever had this asked of me before, Ryan in Lone Tree. Have a tree out in front of my apartment here. I believe the leaves and branches are putting some kind of sap out, which is blowing like a fine mist onto my truck parked in front of the garage. Didn't notice it last spring, but there's now, you know, it's on the windshield, comes off pretty easily. What kind of tree might be doing this? Any listener feedback would be good. Even John Cruddy chiming in would be gratefully appreciated. There are several trees that do this. The one I think I'm thinking of is that Chinese elm. I don't know if it's, can you say that anymore, politically correct? You know, anyway, I think it's a Chinese elm. It's kind of a, it's an, not an elm tree like if you've ever been back east, those stately elms that many of them, most of them are gone because of Dutch elm disease. But Chinese elms out here are kind of a messy, dirty tree in that they a lot of twigs and branches fall off and they look a little ragged. You got to keep them well trimmed, but I think they do leak sap, and this is the time of year, of course, when the sap is running. So I think that's what's going on here. I mean, there's not much else you can do except park in a different place. And as far as I know, the sap from these deciduous trees, and there may be other species that I just the one that popped in my head, but it's not real damaging to your finish. Although, if you're like me, Ryan, you like a nice clean car. I know I do, but it does come off pretty easily with, you know, Windex or whatever. So you just have to kind of wash your car a little more often. The good news is it's going to quit here probably in the next, I would think, couple of weeks when the sap quits, you know, ascending up the tree. I think that's what's going on. So as the flowering and seeding process takes place, the sap runs and you just get more of it. But yeah, this is also a problem if you have a wood deck. You know, that's one of the big things that pollutes a wood deck is tree sap, and it's a little sticky, and so on a deck it attracts dust and dirt and makes your deck look kind of polluted. Anyhow, that's a question I don't think ever been asked here on the program before. I was alluding to my column in the Denver Gazette and Colorado Springs Gazette earlier. I might want to share this Q&A with you if you didn't see it this morning. Matt says he has a dancing washer. It's a front-loading unit that actually moves across the floor a little bit while it's spinning. How do we keep it in its place? Well, these front-loading washers spin at hundreds of RPMs, somewhat faster, not a lot, but somewhat faster than their top-loading cousins do. You just have to work with what you have. You can find anti-vibration feet, anti-vibration and anti-walking rubber foot pads online. They're about $20 for a set of 4. Some of them have adhesive on the bottom, which I don't know if I would like, but a lot of them don't. They just have a serrated rubber bottom to them, which is adds a lot of friction. So you can try those. But this is the thing that I know really works, and my friend who's often calls the program Steve down in Colorado Springs, and I kicked this around several months ago, is just to add some ballast. If you have a washing front-loading washer and dryer set that sits on a pedestal, you know, pedestal with drawers in the bottom, well, you can put ballast in those drawers. Now, you know it. I know you probably want to put your soap powder down there and softener and everything else and dryer sheets, but you may have to lose some of that, not all of it, but some of that room, dedicating it to bricks or concrete blocks or even stacks of ceramic tile, to just add ballast down there, and that will generally get rid of your dancing and waltzing washing machine. So give that a try. So try the rubber feet first, because $20 is not a big deal to invest in them, and then see. Let me know what you think, because I think that's a pretty good approach to try those first. And if not, now if you have a stackable washer and dryer, that's a pretty heavy load, and I don't think they make pedestals for stackables, because it would obviate the reason you use a stackable. You don't have a lot of room, so it would make them probably too tall. So I don't know if you can get a pedestal for a stackable, but if you have just traditional washer and dryer sitting on a pedestal, put some ballast in there, and I think you might like the results. Let's see here. What else do we have? Oh, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit of, about this subject that goes hand in hand with your dancing dishwasher, and that is a water alarm and valve setup kit down under the washing machine, because if there's a leak, it's on the second floor of your home, and if there's a leak, then you could have all kinds of trouble with water getting down in the ceiling of your living room and all that. So a water alarm and a valve set really works nicely. It's a little pad, sits on the floor behind the washer, and when it senses moisture from, say, a broken hose, it slams the hot and cold water valves shut and saves you all kinds of misery, maybe insured and maybe not. So one brand to look for is called FloodStop, all one word, so you might want to check that out. But if you have a washer and dryer in the upstairs of your home, you sure don't want to leave them unprotected when it comes to a flood, right? This is another quickie that was in my column in the Denver Gazette and the Springs Gazette today, was from Jeannie. Recently saw an infomercial, device sets up a field around the house to keep rodents and other pests away. What do you think about it? Not too much. This is an ultrasound or electromagnetic field technology. But it, from everything I've been able to research, it appears that eventually the mice and other pests, spiders and so on, get used to them and come back into your life. So traditional exterminating techniques like humane spring traps for mice and hardware store insecticide sprays seem to produce a lot better results. So I'd save my money. Most of these electromagnetic or magnetic products just don't do what you want them to do. Anyway, that's part one of the program. We'll be here at 5:06 for part two of Around the House, of the rest of this week's email and your phone calls at 303-713-8255. I'm Ken Moon. We will be back to see you right after the news. So stick around. We'd love to hear from you today at 713-8255. Okay, there you go, 506 in the Rocky Mountain West. The Around the House program continues, part two. Good to have you with us here in this gorgeous Rocky Mountain weekend. And check in with us. We'd love to talk to you today at 303-713-8255. 713-TALK is our contact line. And we have live email at aroundthehouse.com. Second button from the left, as we say. And that will get you to me here in the studio. I think it says email Ken or contact Ken or something like that. So anyhow, love to hear from you. Give us a call. We prefer the phone, of course, because this is a call-in show. Let's see here. This is from Jerry, we have a crawl space that seems musty and promotes mildew, and we'd like to use it as a storage area. Should we use a plastic layer, some sort of wood? What should we do, you know, to store in wood or plastic or something down there? I think Jerry means elevating on maybe, you know, some sort of pallet or something like that. Well, first thing to do is get some more ventilation down there, because it's not just your stored stuff, but the house itself will appreciate having less humidity down in the crawl space. You need some exterior vents. I'm amazed at some crawl spaces that I see where there's only one vent, maybe two, but there should be three or four. So get some more ventilation down there. Really, it's good to have a little cross ventilation in the summertime, especially when there's more moisture around from sprinkler systems and rain and so on. So once you get that ventilation, it'll make the crawl space a little fresher. You won't have that dank, stale, still air down there, which can promote all kinds of fungus on the wood underneath in your crawl space. So once that's done, put a layer of 6 mil, that's kind of heavy-duty plastic sheeting, over the dirt, but only if there's no standing water or mud down there. A little dampness or cool soil is fine, but don't put plastic over muck or mud down there, because you won't evaporate. So even with the plastic sheeting protection, I think it's a good idea to use wooden pallets to store valuables, if it's things that are, you know, things that are cardboard. Now, plastic tubs you get at Walmart, of course, they're pretty much indestructible, so don't worry about those. But anything, you know, yeah, maybe you have some valuable stuff in cardboard boxes, I would still elevate them even if you have the plastic down there. You can get pallets sometimes. You used to be able to get them for free at the home centers. I'm not sure they do that anymore, but I think that's what I would do. You want to get the ventilation going down there. Crawl spaces, there are so-called sealed crawl spaces in newer homes now, because we don't want to waste one drop, one scintilla of energy. So we seal up the crawl spaces and put kind of plastic envelope, and that's okay, except you don't know what's going on under the plastic. You don't know if there's moisture down there, standing water, which could be hard on your foundation. So I like a traditional crawl space where you have a little ventilation down there. In the summertime, you open the vents up and let the air go back and forth. In the wintertime, you close them all but, say, one down there. And I think it works out better in terms of the house being able to breathe. You know, it sounds funny when you say a house has to breathe, but it really does. Now we've sealed up houses so close and tight to save energy that now we have to put air exchangers in. And that's another expense, to have air, so many air changes per hour. So we seal houses up really tight to save energy, then start cutting holes in them again. So I think, as we've talked so many times here on the program, saving energy is fine up to a point, but you can overdo it and get increasingly negative returns trying to save a drop of energy here or there. Let's see here. William in Colorado Springs listening on KRDO. You're on the air. Hi. What's going on, William?
I got a question for
you. Yeah, please.
I use the Rich Lawn Turf Foods plus iron.
Yeah.
You know, in the spring, of course. And then I use a Mountain States weed and feed, because I have this nasty weed that won't seem to die. How late, which is dying now because it actually worked, how late can I apply the iron-based Rich Lawn Turf Foods?
Well, I do it all through the season. I just put my second batch of it down about 10 days ago. So I put five bags on throughout the season. One I did, you know, about April 1st, and then, as I say, about 10, 12 days ago. Sometimes I use a sixth even, but at least five. So I would do it every 6 weeks or so. If the weeds are under control, I would probably go back to the Rich Lawn Plus Iron. I like it. It's inexpensive, works really well. So I'd go right back to that and use it every 6, 7 weeks, something like that.
Great. That's wonderful. That was my question. Yeah, I love the product. We've been using it. Well, I worked at an aeration company in the 80s in Denver.
Yeah.
Basically in the whole Denver metro area. And that's what we used to do. What we used to use was the Rich Lawn Turf products. And with an aeration, boy, I'm telling you, it works great. Okay, that's my question.
No. And just as a follow-through, John Credi, of course, and if you have a nice, thick turf lawn, the weeds can't get a foothold anyway. And if you just have weeds here, weed and feed products are fine, except they're kind of expensive for me. So you can spot do the weeds if you don't have a lot of them with like Bonide Weed Beater Ultra. It's approved for your lawn. Doesn't hurt your lawn, but hurts the weeds. You know, there's so check out that instead of using the weed and feed, which I find terribly expensive, because I get Richlawn for, I don't know what you pay, William, but I buy about $11, $12 a bag at the most. So it's pretty.
Exactly. The weed and feed that they carry at, you know, the King Super's markets and around town here in Colorado Springs is a Mountain States weed and feed. Apparently, it's specifically developed for the Intermountain State region.
How much do you pay for? Do you pay for it?
Oh, it's the same as the Richlawn Turf Foods. It's $12, $13 a bag.
Yeah. Well, that's not so bad. Right. Some of the Scotts products, you know, they're weed and they can be $30 or so a bag. But no, that's fine. But go right back to the Richlawn Plus Iron. It's a good balanced product, and I really like it. So I think you're on the right track.
$12.38 at Home Depot for a 25-pound bag that covers 5,000 square feet.
Sure.
Very good product. I highly love it. Hands up to Rich Turf Foods, a Colorado product.
I think they're up in Platteville, as I remember. I have a Scotts broadcast spreader, you know, with a rotating disc underneath, and I set mine at 8, and it's perfect. And I do like the product. William, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Let's talk to Bob up in Fort Collins, KCOL country. Bob, you're on the air with Ken Moon around the house. Hi.
Hi, Ken. I just wanted to recommend Apex Tree Service in Fort Collins.
Okay.
I think they have a wide area that they do service with, and we were just very well pleased. We had a tree that came against our gutter, and they were able to cut the tree all up and then grind down the stump and then had somebody right away come get the wood. So it was just a very, very nice tree service. So
yeah.
I was listening to the gentleman that had called in and wanted to know some tree service people.
I think Bill was calling from Lakewood, but you think they might go down there?
I'm thinking they would have a wide variety of locations that they would service.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. Thank you for the recommendation. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Well, and I think their number is 866-335-8607. And they're a 5-star rating.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you for that recommendation. I do appreciate it. There you go. If you're still listening, there's a recommendation from our buddy in Fort Collins. 303-713-8255. Don't forget the podcast of the program will be up right after we go off the air. Shannon's really good about getting it up, and it's available along with the last 5 or 6 years of Around the House at the iHeart site. You can go through you can get to iHeart through the AroundTheHouse.com website. iHeart it carries the podcast, and as I say, you can dial back segment by segment, or at least hour by hour, back into like 2016. So it's available for you anytime you want to download it and take it with you. Around the House podcasting, you can have it on your iPad, or lots of ways to get the podcast. Bob, again, thanks in Fort Collins for that recommendation. Apex Tree Service. Bill, who's a regular listener and caller, to the program. Thank you, Bob, for that. And Bill, if you're listening, there you go. There's somebody to call. And and the good thing about your recommendation, Bob, is that even if they don't go all the way down to Lakewood, there's a network amongst people that do specific things for a living around your house, and they'll know of a good Lakewood or Westside Metro company that they'll refer you to. So good companies hang out and talk to and recommend other good companies. So, Bob, again, that's a good recommendation. 303-713-8255. And we'll be right back right here on Around the House.
Fix-It videos can be so confusing. Let Ken Moon help you fix things around the house.
21 minutes after 5 o'clock on the Around the House program. We're glad you're with us here. Thanks for sharing your weekend with us. And we would love to hear from you today. Whatever's happening around that special hacienda of yours, check in with us and we'll kick things around a little bit. Let's see, what do I have here? Melissa says we're finished. My sister's name's Melissa. I've always liked that name. We're finishing the basement into a 600-square-foot room. How many heat vents do we need? Well, at the very least, you should install one over each door and window on the outside walls. Chances are you've got basement windows down there. So, yeah, 600-square-foot room. You'll probably, I would think, have a couple of windows in there. So try to put a heat vent over each one. It depends on the exposure and how many exterior openings you have. But if you have a 600-square-foot room, you'll have two or maybe three heat vents, I'm thinking now. And so put two or three over those windows. That's about right. And don't forget put in return air if you are finishing the basement. There may not be return air down there, or sometimes it's on the ceiling. When builders build a home, they put return air is there, but since it's not a finished room, they stick it up on the ceiling, which is useless. It has to be down at floor level. So that those temporary ceiling return airs are just useless. So you want to have a furnace company, maybe the company that does your annual furnace check, they can come in there and just slip in a return air down to floor level, and you'll be fine then, but you don't want to leave it in the ceiling. So, yeah, return air is as important as supply air. Supply air is simply the hot air that comes out of your little vents. Return air we sort of ignore because it doesn't do anything for us. It just sits there behind the sofa, you know, minding its own business. But return air is equally important because it's the other half of the scheme, air in, air out. So return air is important, especially in a basement, because otherwise the air wants to go upstairs before it gets back into the furnace. We want a round trip through the furnace, whether we're heating or cooling, and return air is the way you get that round trip and to start all over and go through the furnace again. So in a 600-square-foot room, two minimum and maybe three would be better vents down there and over the windows, and I'm sure there'll be two or three windows also. And if you have any doubts, if you have a good relationship with your furnace company, maybe you don't have return air, they can come put the heat vents in and they'll make a recommendation also. But I hope that's my recommendation was helpful for you. 303-713-8255. This is from Bill. We're having trouble with our dryer vent. We have an older house and the pipe has lots of right angles, fairly long. We can get a new shorter one installed for $350 or a booster fan for $500. What do you think? Well, I think that I would go the cheaper thing first if you want to get a straight shot. We don't like twists and turns and angles any more than we have to with dryer vents, because that's where lint the lint builds up when there's a slowdown with the air when you have that when you have that 90 degree angle. So try to get a straight shot if you can. Inline dryer vent fans are okay. They're becoming more and more popular as the regulations about dryer vents change. The city authorities, the code authorities, change things all the time. And back, I don't know, 10. Oh, longer, maybe almost 20 years ago now, dryer vent regulations were updated big time, and the result is no more long dryer vents. You got to have short ones, and so a lot of builders go straight up through the roof because it's shorter than going sideways. But we don't, no matter what, we don't like twists and turns, right angles here and there. So try to get a straight shot. I would probably only use the inline vent fan in your dryer vent as a last resort, because it's another electromechanical thing that uses electricity, and it's subject to breakdown. So if you have to, you have to, but I try to get a straight shot out of the building without the right angle. So there you go. I hope that's helpful. Yeah, and you want to clean out your dryer vent, no matter how long or short or how many angles and twists and turns in your dryer vent system, you want to clean it at least once a year. And the way you do that, there's lots of ways, but the quickest, easiest way is to use a electric leaf blower and just hook it up to the inside, the hole in the wall where the dryer vent hooks into, and take the vent off the outside of the building, just blow air through there, and that lint will come streaming out of there. It may not be as bad as you would picture, but you want to do that once in a while, especially if you have a vertical dryer vent. If you're in a newer home, your dryer vent may go straight up through the roof, and that's fine, but they tend to accumulate lint faster than those of us that have a horizontal, and the reason is gravity, of course. The heavy, the moist, lint-laden air accumulates quickly and drops down back down behind the dryer, so they need to be cleaned out a couple of times a year, but keep the dryer vent clean. And this is something, and I don't want to get in the weeds here, but honestly, there you can accumulate lint inside your dryer also. And it does accumulate over the years. It doesn't accumulate that quickly, but there are some twists and turns of the internal path of the air inside your dryer. And you do get lint buildups around the corner and stuff. You know, sometimes if you have that one of those lint screens that's right inside the door and you pull it up, and sometimes there's a big layer of lint there and some of it will drop down inside the dryer. We've all seen that. Sometimes you can use a shop vac to suck that out of there. But every few years, and I'm going to say every 3 or 4 years, you want to take the dryer apart. This is not a big deal if you have a helper. There's usually just some little spring clips and 3 or 4 Phillips screws. You can gently ease the front off the dryer and get back in there. And you'll see chunks of lint here and there that you grab with your shop vac. So you do get lint buildup inside the dryer. It's not particularly dangerous, but it just slows the air down and costs more money to dry your clothes. So you want to do that once in a while. But the big deal, of course, is once a year to clean out your main dryer vent, okay? 303-713-8255. I want to talk to you about Brian at Eagle Crest, my heating and air conditioning guy in the Denver metro area. He has that great deal on a Rheem system if you need air conditioning into your house. And who doesn't? He's got a complete Rheem system for about $3,500, maybe even a little less, depending on the setup at your house, where the electrical lines are and all that, and if you're in a crawl space or if you have ease of access is important. But say round numbers, $3,500 for central air at your house complete. That's a great deal, especially for a Rheem system. Rheem's a great brand. I have Rheem at my house, and you'll really love it. And I want you to call Brian to get this deal. Why have another hot summer when you can get a Rheem system? 18 months, same as cash financing with approved credit if you'd like. So give them a call at 303-451-5607. That's the best price in town. And if you need a new furnace, if yours is 25 years or older, then he's got a complete furnace and AC system for only $7,500. Best deal in the city. So give him a call, and he'll fix you right up. So tell him I sent you, 303-451-5607. And if you need some help, there's a free lunch available through Brian. That's a $50 gift card just for the asking. Simply email me here through the aroundthehouse.com website, and I'll send your email to Brian. You get a $50 credit for any of their services. So can't go wrong. Rheem and Brian at Eagle Crest, a great combination. $3,500 for a complete AC system and $7,500 for furnace and AC. Best deal in town. If you've been shopping around, you know that. So give him a call. We'll be right back. 303-713-8255 right here on Around the House.
From your faucet to your furnace, Ken Moon has solutions around the house.
25 minutes before 6 o'clock on the Around the House program, and we're glad you're with us here. Thanks for celebrating your Saturday with us on the Around the House show. Let's see, what have I got here? Carl sent me an email. Is using brick pavers over an existing patio a good idea? If so, what kind of mastic or mortar should be used? Yeah, it is a good idea. It gives you a very kind of traditional but elegant look. But why not bed them in sand? If you were going to use glue on the pavers on your patio, you run the risk of cracking and heaving as the patio shifts even ever so slightly, or you get thermal changes. The pavers will crack in a heartbeat. So build a barrier around the patio of treated lumber, like 2x8s or something. Then apply a layer of fine sand. on the patio surface, lay the patio pavers and whatever design you want, and lock them in place with more sand. The polymer sand now is the way to go because it locks up like mortar kind of does. So you can they have sand now mixed with a polymer that hardens when it gets wet. So gluing the pavers down, no, you don't want to do that. Just lay them down in a sand bed and then lock them together with that polymer sand. And I think you really like that look. It's a little hard to shovel in the winter, but you don't really care if it's a patio. It's not like your front walk, but I think you'll love the look, and it's easy to do. You don't have to have a huge skill set to do this, just more grunt labor than anything, just to lay those babies down and then lock them together. Nancy says, my ice maker is producing cubes that taste funny. What might be going on? Well, if you don't use your ice maker all that much, maybe the ice supply is contaminated. I would dump it out and start over. You get vegetable smells and food smells and stuff that accumulate in your ice. You can deodorize the refrigerator with baking soda or charcoal briquettes, and just make small amounts of ice, Nancy, just using the on-off lever. So you don't have big batches of ice sitting there day after day, week after week, accumulating odors. So just use it more often or make smaller batches. Celia and Arvada, you're on the air with Ken Moon around the house. Thanks for calling. What's going on with you?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I got an issue with not the deadbolt on my front door, but that other one, you know, with the knob, you know, that lock.
Yeah, the latch,
okay.
Yep.
When you want to lock it, it won't stay locked. It doesn't seem like the lock is engaging into the framework.
Okay.
Pardon?
Yeah. Let's ignore the deadbolt here. When you slam the door shut, can you just pull the door open without turning it?
Yeah.
Oh boy. Yeah. That's not good.
No.
So the latch is stuck inside the door, you're saying?
Well, when you lock it, it doesn't part of the lock doesn't go into the door frame.
I'm saying that the little latch, that little finger that sticks into the door jamb is not coming out of the door, just stuck in there, huh?
Well it won't engage into the door. It just
if you walked over to your front door right now and opened it up.
Uh-huh.
And look down there. Would that latch, that little finger, be stuck in the door and not? It won't come out, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, you may need a new lock, but I think before you do that, you could take that latch apart and clean it a little. It's probably full of grease and maybe some dirt and so on.
Okay.
If it's an old one, and then you can lubricate it. Just a little bit of lubrication.
Uh-huh.
Normally, we use. Well, if the lock part is stuck, where you put the key, we use some graphite in there. But on the inside, the guts of the door, we want to clean that up with a solvent like mineral spirits and just put a little light lubrication in there like the old 3-in-1 oil, sewing machine oil, that kind of thing, just here and there. And that sliding latch part, the part that isn't coming out of the door, I think that just needs to be loosened up a little, cleaned and lubricated. I think it'll go right back into operation. So you got to take it apart.
Okay.
There's nothing magical about that.
Okay. Well,
but you can turn
the knob and it goes back and forth.
Well, you just told me that if you slam the door, you can just pull it open without turning it.
Right.
Yeah. So that latch itself is not coming out of the door. Now, here's the other thing, Celia. The bottom line here, lock sets aren't all that expensive. For $15 or $20, you could buy a whole new knob and latch set if you want to. But I think in the meantime, usually these reluctant latches are just a matter of cleaning them up and lubricating them. So I hope that's helpful for you. I appreciate your call, and
thank you. Good luck.
And if you need some more help, just call us back. That would be great. Let's see here. What else do I have for emails from this week? Let's see. Yes, irritating knowing you think your door is shut and it isn't shut. And that's the way the wind blows open and it seems like you're open for business and you're not. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, here's one from Will. You said on the show it's cheaper to dry clothes with natural gas than electricity. Yes, it is. Does that apply to propane as well? Yeah, it does. You can dry several loads of clothes with either natural gas or propane for the cost of electricity cost per load. The gap is, of course, that electricity, even generated by natural gas, has to be shipped to you with expensive transmission systems and wires and maintenance and so on. And this gap may widen even more in the future. It just depends what happens with natural gas prices. You know, the administration in Washington now doesn't like fracking, so natural gas, of course, might go up some, but there still is a gap there that will never close up, because electricity has to be, as I say, shipped, in air quotes, shipped to your house. All dryers, regardless of how the energy originates, whether propane, natural gas, or electricity, exhaust huge quantities of air outdoors. You know that. If you restrict the flow into the laundry room, not only will the clothes take longer to dry, but it'll cost you more money. And a gas dryer needs a lot of oxygen. Electric dryer needs air, but to flow through the clothes and dry them. But a gas dryer needs that air plus oxygen to burn the propane or natural gas burners. So, you don't want to be able to shut the laundry room door when you're drying clothes. We put in what we call transfer grills. You'll see this in new homes all the time. It's just like a little louvered grill. We cut a hole above the door in the sheetrock. So even if the door is closed, we can get some air in through that transfer grill. That really makes a big difference. If you try to dry your clothes and close the laundry room door, they just take longer to dry. It's just not a good, efficient idea. Okay, let's see here. One more email before we take our break. There's water inside my fridge all of a sudden, says Joe. What's going on? The freezer drain may be plugged up, maybe as simple as that. I hope it is. Frost-free refrigerators, of course, defrost themselves every 6-8 hours or so. And when the frost melts in the back of the cabinet, it has to go somewhere. So the water dribbles out this little hole, ends up in a tray under the refrigerator where it evaporates. Maybe food or ice crystals are blocking that hole, which allows the water to accumulate inside the freezer box, as you indicate. To check this out, you know, it's a little awkward to check it out. You got to remove all the food, remove the back panel on the freezer side, a bunch of Phillips screws, and you'll be able to slide that panel out of there. Find the drain hole, and you squirt some warm, soapy water down through it with a turkey baster. Usually that'll clean that thing out, and it'll drain the water like it's supposed to. While you're doing this, pop off the grill, the front kick plate grill in the front of the fridge on the floor, and pull that tray out. It'll be yucky with dust and dirt and crud and pollution and so on. Just clean that off with some hot soapy water in the sink, and you'll be all set to go with your refrigerator. There's a piece of bread or broccoli or ice, something that's blocking up that drain hole in your freezer compartment. Let's see, before I go to our break, I want to talk to you about a Bonide product. Bonide is a great company back east that has been around for a long time, family-owned company that makes great herbicides and pesticides and fertilizers and repellents and all kinds of things to use around your home, lawn, and garden. If you have insect problems, this is the season. We're coming into it now. I know I've seen more and more ants around lately as it gets hotter. Well, if you have lawn and garden insect pests, I want you to get the 8 Insect Control, EIGHT, just like it sounds. Bonide's 8 Insect Control is effective against more than 100 insects that destroy trees, shrubs, lawns, flowers, vegetables, and fruit. You can use 8 to eliminate those and ticks, fleas, ants, and other home-invading pests. 8 kills insects on contact, repels them up to 30 days. It's odorless and non-staining. That's a great deal. And if you want one product to stop insects all summer long, I want you to get 8 brand Insect Control from Bonide. Bonide products, family made in America, and you can find 8 product, the 8 Insect Control product, and all the other Bonide products at the Big Toolbox in Centennial, Phelan Gardens in Colorado Springs, Tagawa Gardens in Centennial, and Nick's in Aurora, and finally, O'Toole's over in Lakewood. So look for Bonide products at your favorite retailer. If you can't find them, it's easy to go to Bonide.com and put in your zip code and look for Bonide 8 Insect Control for a lot less bugs in your life this summer. We'll be right back right here on Around the House. Give us a call, 303 713 8255.
Need advice on your next home project? Back to Around the House with Ken Moon.
10 minutes before 6 o'clock on the Around the House program. Let's talk to Ruth in Arvada. Ruth, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Ken Moon and Around the House. Hi.
Oh, hi. Nice to talk to you, Ken.
You too.
I was wondering, I have a question. I have a garage floor. It's cement, and it has oil stains on it. Is there any paint that will cover that up?
Well, yeah, but we need to take it one step at a time. I think you got to do everything you can to try to get those oil spots off of there. And it's, you know, it's a step-by-step thing. It's not terribly complicated, but you have to get down to something that the paint will cling to. Paint will not cling to oil and grease. So here's the steps on this, and a handyman could probably, Ruth, do this for you, but the steps that I like are... You use mineral spirits, which you and I used to call paint thinner. So you squirt it on the spots, and then pour some cheap, like Johnny Cat kitty litter on there, and grind it in, and just let it sit for a couple of days. And the mineral spirits will dissolve the oil and grease, and the kitty litter will pick it up. So you do that a couple of times, and then you simply scrub it with like some strong detergent. There's a product called TSP at the hardware store. You scrub it with soap and water, with TSP and water. And once you've done that, that stain and the residue from the oil and grease is pretty well gone. Then you can just simply apply what we call a deck enamel, a gray paint that you just, you know, roll on your garage floor. Yeah. Are you wanting to change colors, or you just want to keep it gray?
No, it's never been painted, and these are kind of old, you know, oil stains. Yeah, they aren't for me, so I just...
Do you have a lot of them, or just here and there?
Looks like a big spot.
One big spot. Well, you'll probably be okay. Now, when you're going to paint, this is an older home, is it, Ruth?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, an older home, sometimes, and you'll have to talk to a paint store like Guyrie's or one of those paint stores about this. Sometimes, you know, old concrete floors, even though they don't look like there's oil and grease on there, there's still a lot of dust and dirt. So you really got to clean them really well, which means a power washer usually. Because there's all kinds of dust and pollution in the pores of that concrete, which the paint won't like. So I would, after you get this oil and grease spot gone, you need to power wash the whole garage to kind of get down to some raw concrete. And that's not a big deal. You can rent a power washer. A handyman type person can come do it for you. But you wash that with a power washer really, really thoroughly, and then your paint will probably cling nicely. Now, the ultimate, and I don't want to, I hate to even mention this, but is to etch the floor with some acid. But you probably don't need to do that. But the power washing is a big deal, so the paint will actually stick. So it's a multi-step thing, and so I think I would run over to a paint store and start talking to them about the best product and preparation. I think they'll agree with me that You work on the oil and grease stain, get it gone, and then power wash the whole garage. So I hope that's helped. It's, you know, it's kind of a multi-step thing, but I think when you're done, you'll like the results.
Oh, okay. Can I ask one quick question?
Yeah, sure.
One more.
Sure.
Yeah, I had a leak in my garage. It has a flat roof, and then it's just 2x4s in the ceiling or whatever. Should I spray that with a kill or a paint or something?
Has the leak been fixed?
Yeah, it has. Well, hopefully it has been, yes.
Yeah. Now, are you seeing any mold up there?
No, it just looks, you know, where the water has stained the wood.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, you may want to repaint, and I think I would put a primer. If you could just, listen, if you don't do anything, you're fine, because as long as you fix the leak quickly, I don't think you're going to get any mold. But if you want to paint it just to make it look better, then I would use the primer like Kills first. I really would,
Okay. Well, I was just curious because it kind of smells now since it's been leaking.
You get that kind of musty smell, and that may go away. But if it doesn't, the Kills will sure kill it. Our air is so dry here that if you fix leaks quickly, no matter inside or outside the house or whatever, they usually don't form mold. Ruth, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ken. Bye-bye.
You have a good one. Bye-bye. John says, my sprinkler system has several heads that create a water pond underneath when they run. What causes that? Well, there's a lot of things. The most likely is the shaft isn't extending all the way through the valve body itself. Unless it raises up all the way, there's no seal around it, so water dribbles around the bottom of that head. And so I would just get a new sprinkler head. That's usually the problem. Now, you could unscrew that head and take it into the sink and really clean it out and just make sure that it operates smoothly. If there's a bunch of sand in there that kind of grits and grinds together, then that's what's hurting it. So, but usually getting a new head is really the answer to that because they just wear out. I mean, they just get old, and you know, as you mow the lawn and step on them and so on, they just accumulate soil and sand in there, and they just sort of wear out. But that's usually the cause. They're not extending all the way up to the full length that they're supposed to seal and keep the water from backflowing into you into making a puddle, like you were saying. Let's see, what else do you have here? Finally, this is from Roseanne. My hardwood floors aren't looking too good. Can I apply something like Minwax or Old English to brighten them up? I don't think you'll like the results with either one. Anything you apply that has a filmy or oily residue, including like Murphy's oil soap, will attract dust and dirt, and they'll look dingy again before you know it. Then you have to do it again and again. It's just going to make a messy buildup. When it's time to actually refinish the floor, the technician will come in and they'll roll their eyes because they have to cut through all those layers of oily residue that you've left to put the clear coat on that you want to get the floors rejuvenated. So you may have to resand everything. So no, don't apply anything that will leave any kind of a film or layer on your hardwood floors. I use a Swiffer on my hardwood floors. It's kind of innocuous. It doesn't really do too much, and they look pretty good. So I would just do that. Yeah, but you got to refinish your hardwood floors once in a while, every 5 to maybe 8 years, depending on use and dogs and kids and so on. It's not as expensive as it sounds. So I would just minimally clean the hardwood floor. You can use Swiffer. You can use a little vinegar and warm water with a barely damp sponge mop. And you can also find specific no-residue hardwood floor cleaners at a flooring store. So no oily stuff like you're suggesting for sure. No oil soaps because you won't like the ultimate results. Well, listen, that's all she wrote for the program. Thanks for joining us here on the Around the House show. We hope you'll have a great week. And if you want to contact me during the week, it's aroundthehouse.com. Shannon Scott, thanks for your expertise as always. And the podcast, Shannon will put the podcast up within the next hour or two. It'll be available for you. God bless. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you right here, same time, same station next week for Around the House.